So let's begin, and a very warm welcome to the listener. This is our very first podcast, and whether you're an experienced nose who's passionate about perfumery materials, or you're just starting out in perfumery, we hope that we can inspire you to start creating. So first off, I want to introduce the Natural Perfume Academy co-founder and my podcast co-host, Justine Crane. Hi, Justine. You're so welcome. Justine is an educator with 25 years plus perfumer experience. And Justine is also an author of several books, is in the process of writing another book as well, which we'll be able to talk about more. I am Ruth Ruan, and I am the Natural Perfume Academy administrator and your podcast host. I am based in Galway, Ireland, Galway is on the west coast of Ireland. So to start off, it is Earth Day today, and we chose Earth Day because we wanted to have a special day to remember. Really, our podcast starts today, and natural perfumery and Earth, they're interconnected, and we wanted to honor that connection. So if you've stayed to the very end of this podcast, actually, we are going to give you some information about a Natural Perfume Academy Earth Day plans and where you can go to get them. So Justine, welcome. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. So we're both new to this whole podcast experience, and I think we're both very brave here, actually.
Yes, I agree. This is scary.
It is scary, really, isn't it? Just getting comfortable with sitting in front of a microphone and talking and knowing that you're being recorded. So first of all, I just wanted to talk about, I think I've noticed that any interviews I've ever done in relation to natural perfumery, one of the first questions that I get asked is, where did it all start? What's your earliest perfume memory? I actually don't know your one, Justine. So do you want to tell me the story of your earliest perfume memory? Tell the listener, rather, and myself, because I don't actually know.
I suppose I've always been the kid who played in the garden, always, in the dirt, with the plants. And I think the very first memory I have of realizing plants have a smell. Every plant has a different smell. And my mother had these two giant geraniums growing by our front door on either side of our front door. And I remember playing hide and seek. And I hid behind one of those geraniums. And I was just completely enveloped by that scent. And I know, I do remember that at least one time playing hide and seek, I wouldn't come out because I just wanted to sit there and smell that and the soil, the damp soil. Yeah, I think that was the first.
Geraniums have such a beautiful smell. I love it so much. Some people don't like it, but I really love it. What age did you say you were, or did you?
I was probably six.
Yeah.
Yeah, six. We had just moved into the house.
Wow, yeah. And do you still love geranium?
I do. I'm growing geranium now. I have two rose geranium and then just that, I guess I want to call it an ordinary geranium, is the ornamental.
Yeah, the ordinary ones. Yeah, yeah. I like those ones the best. I just think for some reason, they're just so musky. They always remind me of a man's beard, always reminds me of the smell of ordinary geraniums.
Yes, they do. They have a very deep, beautiful, not quite floral, but yes, a beautiful scent. And it's a real connected memory for me. So happy times.
Definitely. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I like trying to remember my first memory, I suppose, of perfume would have been my mother wearing Tosca. I don't know. Do you know that perfume? It's by the same company that made 4711. You know that one?
Right.
But it
Yeah.
isn't 4711. And I remember people used to buy her it because it was a very similar label. And she would say, that isn't the one that I like. So Tosca was by the same company, but it wasn't the same. And that's also, I just remember that perfume, but and mixing concoctions, but not really more for kind of herbal medicines and things like that rather than perfumery. It wasn't until years later that I started to get into perfumery.
Right.
And
My
so that's how
mother,
we met.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mother never really wore perfume, so I don't really associate perfume memories with her so much. I know later in her life, she got stuck on Jovan's vanilla musk, and she wore that probably for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I never really cared for
Yeah.
it. But yeah, my perfume memories begin with the plants. Just smelling the flowers, getting in there and squishing leaves together to try to make a perfume, which, as we all know, doesn't work. But
No,
yeah.
it doesn't. But yeah. And then, of course, your favorite flower. My favorite flower is primrose, which has a very nice, delicate, rosy smell, actually.
I don't know that I've ever smelled primrose.
Really? Did it grow wild in California? No.
We have microclimates, and most of my experience with plants has been more of a Mediterranean and then dry desert.
Oh,
So
that's so interesting. I just
certain
imagined
things
you'd
don't
have primrose.
grow.
Yeah. They come out at the same time as hyacinths, and you wouldn't have
Very
bluebells
early.
then, would you? Wild
No,
bluebells. I
no.
doubt it. So yeah, that's how we met. So you were already versed in perfumery and I was just starting out when we met. It would be like 17, 18 years ago now.
Oh gosh,
So
it's been a
it's
while.
been a long journey. Things have changed a lot since then.
They certainly have. Yeah.
So what's your favorite story from when we first started, or do you have one?
When we first started, I think just the whole excitement of it, starting this whole new journey. Before, it seemed very unstructured. There was still a lot of gatekeeping going on. There was a lot of hidden information. And then when I dove right in, because we were starting the academy, I realized that there really isn't a secret. It's just about getting your hands dirty. You just have to get in there and do the work. That's it. Evaluation's primary. That really starts you.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
where the secret is. The secret is do
Yeah.
evaluations.
And then, of course, being a good teacher, because well, you can know all the stuff, but to be a good teacher, you've got to really do what you do, which is make the student fall in love with the materials and natural perfumery. And that's what happens when they fall in love
Exactly.
with it. That's when it becomes.
A passion.
Yeah, a passion, yeah.
Yeah.
And then your work is done. That's the secret of
Right.
being a
And that's what
teacher.
we do at
Yes.
NPA is we do try to, most of our students who come to us as already have a great interest in natural perfume, and we just expand that into just like a need, like they have to do. This is part of their life's journey. Like some of our most successful students have moved on to open shops, to teach. And they always come back to us for more information and support.
That's right. Yeah. It's just become a part of their life's journey, like part of
Right.
their life.
Yes. And it does consume you as.
Yeah, it does. It does. But it's one of those things that you can fit it into your life. If it's something that you really love, you can fit it into your life.
But it's
And
just a natural part of you.
yeah,
And
I think
everyone
that's it.
knows this. Yeah, it's just a natural part of you. They come into your home. and they understand immediately who you are from things that you have sitting around, like distillation units and all these essential oils and bottles. And I have most of those items in my shop, but in my living room, I have bookshelves full of pretty jars of incense materials. And that really seems to interest people as well, because as we know, incense is perfume.
It is, yeah. It's the earliest form of perfume, right?
Yes,
it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I imagine what started when fire started, and or even not even fire, but because we were talking about it the other day with warming incense, and all it takes is the sun really to warm something, and then somebody noticed how beautiful it smelled, and that's where it started.
Right.
Or is that where it started? Not really purifying the air, but scenting the air as such.
I think initially it probably started with cooking fires, and they're throwing these pieces of wood in there, and
yeah.
It could be a piece of sandalwood or a piece of agarwood or cedar, any aromatic wood. And then they realize, oh, this, but that's very basic. And then
yeah, and it's the curiosity later, then.
Exactly. And then they think these are things, or they maybe perhaps thought that these things were tied to spirits, the gods. And that's why they eventually evolved into being used to contact spirits, send prayers to spirit.
And revered as well.
Exactly. Right.
And recently you brought up the idea of seed to bottle. Definitely in my tracks, because you hear about slow food all the time and people do talk about slow perfumery, but from seed to bottle, it's taking it, scaling it right back, isn't it? So that's one of the things that in the show, as we go on, it's one of the things we're going to be talking about a lot. So I just wanted to put out there kind of other topics that we are going to be talking about, but I think the topics are going to be endless. So the listener, we're hoping the listener is going to write in or comment and ask us about certain topics or for certain tips. And that's the kind of feedback that we want, isn't it?
Exactly.
To ask us questions.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then if they're not asking us questions, we're going to plow ahead and once every 2 weeks, we'll have a show, and sometimes there'll be guests. And sometimes it will just be myself and Justine. And hopefully we're going to be inspiring all these creators to get curious and find out more about natural perfumery.
About the seed to bottle.
Oh, yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, that goes back to the original way that people would make perfumes or even medicine, was they had to grow their own. There was some harvesting, obviously, but like fields of lavender, you have to grow that. You have to start it somewhere before it ends up in a bottle. And this is all small scale. For me, I'm very small scale. I have a very small space to work in, but I've managed to squeeze in a yuzu tree and those geraniums and hyacinth in February and tuberose in August, and everything is shifting around. Let's see what's ready to go now. Oh, I have a Cecile Bruner rose bush, which is actually more like a tree right now. It's growing up to the second floor balcony of our home in the back, and it's blooming now, and it's just insane. And that Cecile Bruner came from a friend who took the cutting from her grandmother's plant that had been planted. I'd say that tree has been cut from a bush that was 120 years old.
Wow, that's crazy.
At this point, yeah. And it's just enormous right now. I used to have a lot more that I grew, but my son took over the gardening and decided that he wanted tomatoes instead of tuberose. Things were cut out. And anyway, I'm putting it all back in. Yeah. Right. And you grow these things, you go through the process of growing them, tending them, harvesting them, and then extracting their scent. And I think you have to do that as a natural perfumer, especially in order to understand the material better. All the materials, yeah. I distinctly, and we're going to go back to incense here. I distinctly remember when I first started seriously working with incense, and I had a few pieces of orris root that was gifted to me, and it was an antique, few antique pieces of orris root. And I remember I didn't have a commercial grinder at that point, and so I was trying to crush it in a mortar, and crushing orris is next to impossible. So it took a long
time. I've never been able to do it.
Yeah, it takes hours, really. Mm-hmm. And I just remember sitting there just zoning out, and suddenly I smelled violets because I forgot what I was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just clicked in my head at that moment what natural perfumery was about. The whole, it was like a revelation, something that came from outside of me. It was the craziest thing.
Wow. And for orris root, especially to bring it, I was letting my son Anthony smell that the other day, and he was going, smells familiar. And I had to explain to him all about the ironies, isn't it? And what they do to the nose. And it's like almost like a ghost scent, trying to remember a dream that you had. So yes. For that to be the one that to do that, it's just, wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. I wish that would happen with all of the materials, but it doesn't.
Yeah. But probably if you had the time, I think, to, lock yourself away in a kind of a cabin. And
oh, yeah. That's the dream.
Yeah. But you'd become a hermit. And
if you're surrounded by those materials, that's perfectly fine.
I wouldn't mind doing that myself, actually. So then, teaching perfumery, of course, this is a huge part of your expertise, Justine, but I don't teach. I deal with students on a daily basis. And today, then, I was just thinking about the blocks that we come up against again and again, especially in terms of online teaching, because that's one of the things when this first started, people said to me, how are you going to teach perfumery online? Isn't that more hands-on or whatever? I just wanted to ask, I mean, I have my experience, but what about yours? What would be the kind of thing that you'd see coming up again and again for students, like in terms of, I suppose, blocks or stumbling blocks?
I suppose it's just about not having an immediate answer. Like when they ask a question, they have to wait a little while for me to get the question. And then answering the questions. So there's that. Not understanding concepts and ideas. We do have a lot of international students, so there can be some language barriers. And I feel like that's been easily overcome because all these people that do come in are pretty passionate about the work. And they want to know. They want to understand. And I do take the time. I really do. I take a lot of time. I come at the questions from their perspective. I know the answer, so how do I explain it to them in a way that is the easiest for them to understand? And also, I think at the beginning, there were some issues with a little bit of lack of information. Some of the students would ask questions about something that I didn't have understanding of at the time. But, and there wasn't a lot of that. There was just, that's just one of the beginning of the whole thing where there were, because of the gatekeeping, obviously, there were some gaps in information. But I think a lot of it, too, is some students are afraid to, I think this is the biggest issue, actually, are afraid to experiment. Like they're afraid to mess something up. And I tell them, you're not going to mess anything up. It may not be very good, but you did. So you experimented and you tried to put something together and it didn't quite turn out. But now you know how to fix this. Like there's too much patchouli or not enough bergamot or whatever to come through the way that you wanted it to. Experimenting, you have to experiment. You can't be afraid to experiment. That's really it.
Yeah, that's it. You give them the space to do that, I think, as well, because you have empathy towards the students, so they feel more comfortable actually doing that. You don't push away their questions or things like that. And I think, again, that's one of the things that no matter what you're doing, it's a lonely kind of a place. Nobody else can do the scent evaluations except for you. It is nice, obviously, working in a classroom environment with your friends or with your student or fellow students. But so that is one thing that people are missing out on. But I think what makes up for that then is the fact that it's so international, like you were saying, the people from all over the world. And so the connections that are made there, especially when it comes to natural ingredients, natural materials, even things like regulations are different in different countries, and just students learn so much from each other. So I think that more than makes up for it. Do you?
Yeah, I agree. And I do. I try really hard not to seem dismissive. I understand where they're coming from because I was there once.
Yeah.
And it really frustrated me that people really were trying, especially during the early years when this really started to grow, were really trying hard to gatekeep. They just really didn't want to share information. They didn't, there was no, I don't know. They just didn't want to help people coming in. And the truth of it was, now I realize this, that quite a lot of them didn't know. They didn't know. They were, I don't know what they were doing, but they didn't know either, but they didn't want to seem less experienced or. And then there were a few that were really quite dismissive. And I guess I resented that a lot. So when we did this, when we jumped into creating the Natural Perfume Academy, I made a decision right at the very beginning that I wasn't going to do that to our students. I was going to answer their questions. That's why they're there, right?
Yeah.
They were there for that. So
yeah.
I was going to.
The ones that are answering, asking the questions and getting really stuck in, they're the ones that are doing the work. And when they're asking questions, they're doing the work.
Exactly. And I know some of them probably got frustrated with me because my go-to answer was, we'll try it, do it, see what happens, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's that curiosity again. And what about, I'm sure you have loads of these stories, Justine, but one time that you felt really inspired by a student, what would be? Now, look, I know that you probably got so many that it's hard to pick one. So for the purpose of the pilot episode, we just couldn't pick one. So who would you say?
Can I say it?
Not to be a person, I think. Doesn't even have to be a person, but just a time. I mean, whatever you want to do here. You
can. Okay, I'm going to say names and I hope they don't get.
Yeah, no, do with me. Yeah, I think that's good.
I just have a few that are two, actually, that are real standouts. And for specific reasons, not saying that anyone else wasn't that great, but these two really, they just stuck in my head. Wait, Ari Bertin, who went through the Keefe class.
Yeah.
She took the most fantastic photos of the process of creating that incense. And she made the connections between the spirit and the materials in a way that no other student had done. And even I hadn't done it. We come at it from a spiritual aspect, but she really put in the work. And we have it as what is it called?
A case study.
A case study, exactly. Yes. And the other one, and I'm sure he won't mind if I say, but Solomon.
Because, Solomon. Yeah.
Yeah. His final perfume submission He's a tea sommelier, right?
Amazing.
Right?
I bet he's meticulous.
Yes. And he's a chemist.
Yeah.
So
Wow.
he turned in a perfume that was 100% natural, that smelled like L'Artisan's Tea for Two, which is discontinued. And it was my favorite perfume at that time. And he turned in a natural version. It wasn't, he didn't copy it. He made his own, but that's what it smelled because of his
Wow.
experience with tea. And it was, yeah, I hid it. I put it away because I didn't want anyone to use it. Normally, what I do after I do the evaluations of their perfumes, I put them in a little box. And anyone in the house can use the perfumes that are in there. That one I put away, and now I can't remember where I put it. So it's hidden away somewhere
That's interesting. You'll come
for
across this one
posterity.
day.
I hope so. I look every so often where I might have put it and just haven't been able to find it yet. But when I do, it'll be a happy day for sure.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how things went.
But there have been dozens of students that have come through who've really struck me with their passion, with their determination. There are some that had some real roadblocks who still stuck with it and went through and turned in just astounding work. Yeah.
Because the path, it's not an easy path. It's not a straight path. It's a rocky path. It's difficult. There's no matter where you live in the world, there are going to be stumbling blocks, whether it's regulations, whether it's sourcing materials,
Life, just their life.
just life in general.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, I think, a calling. Being an artist or a musician, it obviously is a calling, and that's what we're here for. Thanks for
Yeah.
that. That is fabulous. I love hearing about Solomon. I remember you mentioned Solomon back then, but it's just lovely to actually hear the story. What I wanted to know, so we have our Earth Day. This is really an Earth Day special, but it's also our inauguration day, and so it'll be cemented forever in time as 22nd of April. And the Earth Connection, really, we came up with some ideas, didn't we, for the Earth Day and Natural Perfume Academy and the podcast. And one of them, I know you had an amazing one, which we'll talk about. I don't know how to say the word, but yeah.
Terroir. Yeah.
Oh, fabulous
Where
word. Oh my God. I actually had to look it
things
up.
grow.
Yeah, so
Right.
terroir.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the
And
environment where a thing grows and how it affects everything about that plant, the scent, the intensity of the scent. Yeah.
yeah.
Because it does
Like
matter.
when I looked it up, like about wine, maybe if you're growing wine, grapes, or you're growing tea, or you're growing really anything. The
Right.
terroir is what influences how it's going to maybe taste or smell or whatever.
Exactly.
So
Right.
that's just to think about it like that. And terroir literally means, what is it? Earth.
Yes, Earth.
It's like earth, no,
The
earth
ground,
notes.
yeah, the ground that it was, the place that it grows,
Yeah, the
the
place that it grows.
environment that it grows.
Yeah, the environment. Yeah,
Right.
just everything about that. So also you mentioned that, and until you mentioned this, I didn't actually even ever really think about it, but that every place has its own smell. When you go to the country in Italy, you just have a different smell to going to the country in Ireland too. And it's not just the country, is it? It's just the earth itself.
Right. No, I make it a point when I travel. When I get to a certain place, I will smell it, like consciously smell it. When I went to Brazil in 2018, the air was so different than where I'd come from. It smelled different. And you make those connections. So you make those memory connections where when you smell it again or you think about it, it brings all these memories. The smell, there's a certain smell in the mountains near where I live, and I semi grew up there. I used to live at in a logging camp every summer for about 3 or 4 years. And there's a plant up there that I kept. There was a smell, and it's, some people find it nauseating. They will actually get sick smelling it. It's so strong. And then other people, myself included in those other people, love that smell. To me, that smell, that's a smell of a place. Growing up, I smelled this. And then it wasn't until I started doing perfumery that I realized that what that was. I thought it was a different plant, but it turns out it was mountain misery, Shamabacia foliolosa.
I've heard about that before. You've distilled it, haven't you?
There's a process here. It's very resinous. It's related to the rose. It's part of the rose family. It grows very low to the ground, and its common name is mountain misery. Now, here's the special thing about it. It only grows in that part of the mountains in California. It grows nowhere else on the planet.
Wow, that's crazy.
So when you drive up, and the scent of it, especially in the summer when the resin is high and the air is still, it is so overwhelming and intoxicating, which is one of the reasons they call it mountain misery. The other reason is because if you walk through mountain misery, because it's very low growing, it's not ground cover, but it's a very low growing bushy plant that you'll tend to just stomp right over the top of. It gets on your clothes. When it gets on your clothes, it doesn't come out. No matter how many times you wash, it won't come out. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've never...
Landiferous, you know, that one, that has infused resin, but that resin is more pleasant.
Right.
If that one is pungent, then I'm thinking also rue, R-U-E.
Right.
I don't think that's even used in perfumery, but that's got that kind of really pungent, you don't, not sure if you like it or not thing.
It doesn't smell like anything else.
Right.
And
yeah.
It's very hard, very difficult to describe how it smells. You have to smell it. That's just it. You just have to smell it to understand. Well, anyway.
Well, yeah. Anywhere else then.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but when I've been to other mountain ranges, other places, and never really consciously noticed that I didn't smell it. But I just remember when I did, or when I do, they're all happy memories. I get happy memories, and it's definitely connected to place. Like, I know I'm where I grew up. I know I'm in those mountains.
Yes, but that goes back to kind of Mother Earth, isn't it? Because
exactly,
like when you love somebody, you love their smell. That's the thing, isn't it? It was one of the things that came up when we were talking about Earth Day. Just to have that day where you're just smelling rather than taking anything or extracting anything, or just actually just like you would if it was a loved one, you just want to snuggle into them and smell their hair or smell them or whatever. That's the thing about the earth, isn't it? It's like picking up a bit of soil and just smelling it, or smelling the flowers as you walk by.
Yeah. I just recently went up there just a few days ago, and it's spring, and so trees are still a little bit bare and some flowers are coming up. It's not quite time yet. It's still very cold up there, but I found the mountain misery, and it's, the scent is very faint. And so I'm like, oh, I can't wait until August when I can come back and start harvesting. Here's the thing too. You can't really extract it. It has to be, you can't distill it. It'll just gum up your unit and you won't get anything out of it. Hydrosol, but like I said, so many people don't appreciate the smell. So I don't find it appropriate for a hydrosol based on that alone. But it, you can use a CO2 extractor to get some resin. But I find tincturing it is the easiest. And also because I'm an incense maker as well, I just use it dry. I just powder it and put it in the wort.
Wow, cool. What's it like to burn then?
It smells exactly the way it does in the wild. Yeah, it doesn't, there's no change in the way that it, you know, like so many things when you warm them, they change slightly. This is why I do warming incenses rather than combustible. And I will do, a few people need it for the smoke. They want it for the smoke.
Yeah.
And but because of the way that I make incense, I use a lot of very expensive, delicate materials. And so I want you to be able to smell that. So I recommend, in fact, I don't even make them combustible. You can't burn them even if you tried. You have to warm them. And I find that they're true to the scent of the materials. They last so much longer. You can burn them literally for days. And then and like a cone, you burn it and it's gone in 15 to 20 minutes. And although the scent lingers, it doesn't linger the way it does with the warming incense.
Yes. Yeah.
Completely different. And it also, when you do warming incense, it opens up the opportunity to use materials you would never consider putting in a combustible incense.
Oh, very interesting. We'll have to do a whole podcast on incense anyway, but I reckon warming incense even just is a whole other subject I'd love to talk about more. Absolutely. Yeah. So now the other thing, so I'm 16 years and still learning, but when I first started out, I definitely didn't think like a perfumer. And then a shift happens. And I think one of the things that you really, it's one of the loneliest parts of doing the course, is the conscious smelling activity, where, you know, you spend a long time doing that. And somebody that's never really smelled before in a conscious way, it's almost like getting into a habit, isn't it?
The CSAs are a very crucial part of my teaching method. And that goes back to the evaluations. It's along the same things. And I know a lot of students, especially at the beginning, when we first began to implement them, thought that it was just a bunch of busy work. Here, smell this, now compare it to that. Now find the raw material and compare it to the oil, that sort of thing. And I think very quickly they discovered that was not at all what it was. It really immerses you. It's about immersion. Well, they talk about, if you want to learn a language, you have to immerse yourself in that culture and that language. You have to be in it.
That's right, you do. And it doesn't come naturally to everybody.
No.
Some people, it just seems to come naturally, but it definitely didn't to me. Like even the other day, I was letting Anthony smell something and he said it smells like olives. And I was so surprised. What was it? It was, yes, I know what it was. It was Agnus Castus, which always just catches in my throat. And it's just such an unusual scent. And I just smell wet dog. Or wet hair, wet goat or something. And he smelled it and he went, it's like olives. And I just was like, that's it.
Right.
I'm able to just connect this kind of, and just immediately come up with this sort of, it's a little bit like a perfumer when you might play two like notes in a song and a musician will just hear it and immediately know what that song is. Whereas like me, I don't have a musical ear. And I would have to hear a quarter of the song or wait till they started singing before I knew what the song was. Wait till they started singing the word. So I imagine for somebody that isn't trained, that's what happens. So they smell something and go, yeah, it smells like something I smelled before, but they're not able to put the word with what they're smelling.
Exactly.
So that's that training, isn't it, that you do? It's like the training of the connection, making those connections over and over so that when you're working, you're able to just make that connection. When you think, what does that need? What notes does that need? Or what do I want to make it look like? Or what do I want to make it smell, rather? And that you're able to actually make those connections then and know exactly what something needs. Is that really what happens?
Yes. But also, there's not a real clear language for describing scent. And we have an understanding what you're smelling. Like you said, it smelled different to you. And he said it smelled like olives. Now, and a light went on, correct? Like you went, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's what that smelled like. Sometimes you get so stuck in it with your disgust. That's really a lot of it. If you don't like it, you don't try to suss out as much. information. You're just like, oh, get that away from me.
Yeah, and yeah. You don't feel like exploring it further.
Exactly.
And it just,
yeah.
That's what happened. Yeah. And again, that won't happen unless you are consciously smelling.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. If you're really taking it in, I think one of our exercises includes neem oil, which is not pleasant at all, but it's an exercise in understanding everything that you smell, even those things that you don't like, finding language to describe what you're smelling without just saying, oh, that's gross. I don't like that. Yeah, really exploring these not so nice smells is as important as smelling the good ones, the ones you enjoy.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah. And so then that brings me on to the next part of, you touched on it earlier, is that idea of feeling free to make mistakes. And I think that's the key to overcoming fear, really. You have that curiosity. Everybody has a natural curiosity, I suppose, more so as children. And then as we get older, we start to, maybe for whatever reason, we're afraid to make mistakes, or we're afraid we're going to get it wrong. But if you don't make mistakes, you're not going to be able to make perfume. Some people have a fluke where they will make something that smells really, you know, exactly like what they wanted or something. But that is what it is. It's a fluke, isn't it? You can't expect somebody just to learn perfumery and not make mistakes.
Oh, yeah. I think even those of us who are experienced in what we know will work and won't work, we still make mistakes. But to avoid making horrendous mistakes, like creating an entire perfume in a large batch and realizing later this doesn't really work.
Yeah, an expensive mistake.
Right. Is all that experimentation. Yeah, there's no getting around it. You have to experiment. You have to play around with things and make a lot of notes. You have to write everything down. You don't want to make the same mistakes over and over again because you haven't been recording older prior mistakes.
That's very true. Yeah, I never even thought of that, actually. Yeah. And then, of course, like, your method as well is having things diluted, and in a way that allows people to feel free to make mistakes. Like, if you have a very expensive material, but you have it diluted down, you can experiment a little bit more and see what works and what doesn't without feeling like that you're really just throwing money away.
And we're not talking about making an ounce of some experimental formula. We're talking about milligrams or milliliters, tiny amounts. A drop, two or three drops of one material that's diluted. And you can figure out what's going to work and what isn't going to work.
Yeah. And that's another thing that the Natural Perfume Academy gives us, is it gives us that network. You can ask your kids what something smells like, or you ask your friend. I have a friend who never smells anything natural, and I do think that their olfactory system is probably busted by now, but they'll smell something that I made and they'll just think, oh, everything smells like patchouli. And you're going, well, patchouli isn't really a thing. But anyway, I don't know.
I honestly don't think it's helpful to have other people chime in on your work like that.
Especially when they don't know what they're talking about. But if, let's say, you have another student who's able to give a mentor who's able to give some actual feedback, we have that. Or like we could send a little vial to somebody across the other side of the world and they could smell it and give them some feedback. And that's what you do, isn't it, with the end evaluations anyway. That's the big finale.
They're final before they finish. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I don't think having just your neighbor or your children or someone who doesn't really have that experience with those materials to tell you, oh, I don't like this, or it smells like, you said, patchouli, or it smells like something, or no, it's, I think, first of all, if you're just starting out, yeah, you could probably ask around and have people try to help you that way. But once you're in it as deeply as we are at this point, you don't need someone else to tell you that. You know whether it's good or it's not good. And that just comes from working with the materials every day.
It takes a long time to get there, though, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
First of all, be able to make something that is good, but recognizing something that is good is also part of the learning process.
That's exactly true.
Pardon, sorry, what did you say, Justine?
I said it does take a very long time.
Oh, it does. And it doesn't just happen. You have to do the work. You have to put in the work. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're just coming up to the end of the podcast there. And one of the things that struck me is that we did celebrate, our Natural Perfume Academy celebrated its 16th birthday in 2024. And 16 years is a long time, but so much has changed. And like, we've been through a pandemic. When we started out first, we had, everybody was using Yahoo groups. I hated even saying the word Facebook, and then gradually everybody moved there. And yeah, a lot has changed. A lot has changed personally for me. So what about you, Justine? What was your life like before Natural Perfume Academy versus afterwards? Or is that just like too big a question?
I think my level of comfort has increased working with doing what I do. When we first started, I was very deeply into working constantly with naturals, with every aspect of it, and sourcing. I did a lot of sourcing then. And I don't do it so much anymore because I know where to get the good stuff. So that's part of it. And I'm just more comfortable in the work now. It seems more relaxed and more meditative than it ever has. And I don't use social media so much. I don't go on Facebook and hang out in groups. And, you know, I just don't do it anymore. I just find it too distracting and too, I don't know. It's just not where my head is right now. I just want to work with the materials and make beautiful things. And then it was more, back when we started, it seemed more chaotic and frenetic, and there was just so much going on, some very loud voices screaming over the top of everyone else. And I just don't get involved in that anymore. But yeah, it's more comfortable. It's a happier place.
Yeah, I had the Celtic Tiger suspending me when I first got into natural perfumery. So I did a lot of crazy sourcing, importing kilos of jasmine and tuberose from India. And I just look back now going, how did I do that?
I know.
And I actually still have some. So I did invest quite a lot of materials back then, but a lot of stuff from it. Back then, you could really only get unusual natural perfume material readily from the United States. So I did purchase quite a lot, and I did make sure that the ones that I was purchasing were going to age well. So I still have a lot of those. I have most of my material still, because I wouldn't be the prolific perfumer. I don't create a lot. I'll just create maybe when the humor takes me. That's changed a lot. I suppose it's the finances, but before the kind of Celtic, what would you call it, the crash of 2008, if you just wanted to you could say, yeah, I need a credit to get a load of this, and you just get materials. Oh yeah, here, you have that. And so, yeah, that's what I spent money on that I didn't have back in 2008, was on natural perfumery materials. But it actually was a very good investment because I can still use them.
Exactly. Yeah, that kind of reminds me of something too. One of the big differences from when we first started until now is there are a lot of scam websites claiming to sell naturals that are 100% synthetic. They're not real at all. And I think teaching online, makes it difficult for students to suss out the real deal, which is why we provide a list of good suppliers and ask them not to go anywhere else. Yeah. Because we also have a list of those types of suppliers too, to avoid. But I do notice, or have noticed in the last several years, an increase in those scam sites. And I also noticed at the same time, students using those materials in their final perfumes. Not a lot, but enough to know that's what's in there. And I always do investigation, and I always go to the supplier, and then I realize they all seem connected, like they're the same company, but with different names and different websites selling all the same things.
And so you can even fake certificates and things like that. But really, the nose knows, isn't it? Like, you've got to get somebody like you or Cher to actually evaluate the material and immediately know whether it's real or not. It's a piece of paper certificate. It's easier than ever these days to fake those, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And this kind of reminds me too. I remember in the early days you were talking about, you were buying kilos of things. I was doing the same thing, but I remember buying from eBay.
eBay. Wow.
eBay in the early days. Yes. And you could get some really fantastic stuff, but also you could get cheated. Yeah. I remember specifically, I think it was Agarwood. I think it was Agarwood. It was the actual wood pieces. And I had really good luck for the first year of getting nice pieces of Agarwood. And then suddenly they were selling this Agarwood that had synthetics. They had drenched it in synthetics. It was the actual wood, but they had put synthetics on it, oils or whatever.
And so just to make it.
Yeah. And that ended my foray into eBay for finding that material. Also, yeah, eBay was really good for collecting antique and vintage oils like sandalwood or even rose. And now when you do find it, it is so astronomically expensive. It's not even how it was at the beginning at all, not even close.
Yeah, they cottoned on. This is a good
thing. Yes, yes. So I don't use eBay to source anymore. It's just too risky, I think, at this point.
It's too risky. I think you've got to know the supplier almost personally, I think, or know somebody that knows them personally. Excuse me. And I think that's one of the things, again, with the Natural Perfume Academy is, for example, you could have Anne Walsh in Brazil and she might know a supplier personally that provides a particular material and has sampled it herself. I think this is one of the beautiful things that we haven't fully tapped into that yet. And again, of course, people like that word gatekeeping again, people do tend to gatekeep their suppliers. So when they find someone that's an amazing supplier of something, but they don't want to share it. But I think that, like, with something like perfumery, I think like gatekeeping things like supplies is like an artist or like a fine painter, fine artist, gatekeeping paints, because it isn't really about the paint. It is about the paint, obviously, the quality of the paints, but it's what you do with them.
It's the artist.
Yeah, exactly.
And the art they make. Yeah. Now, there was a lot of that going on in the early days as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm going to sign off now. And so I think one of the most important things I don't want to leave out here is just to let the listener know that they're, if they want to catch up on anything. So today is Earth Day and we have come up with a few different ideas. We have the terroir. You go saying it there,
terroir.
And we have another idea which Zoe came up with, and she suggested scent walks as well. She's in Greece. And again, just smelling the earth without actually taking anything from it. So we're going to follow up And we have on, if you go to npacertification.com, you will be able to find and then just look at all available courses, and you will see it's like a, they display like products, and you scroll all the way down to the bottom and you'll be able to find the Natural Perfumers Club, and you can join there. It is absolutely free. You will have to give some details to join, because it isn't just a free for all. It's not a spammy group. And then once you're in there, you can catch up on all of the different things that we were talking about on the podcast. And also, if you want to get involved in any discussions or any of the activities that are coming up, then you're very welcome. So that's it. I don't know if I mentioned it's free. I think I did. So that's the Natural Botanical Perfumers Club. And yeah, so what else? So also, I want to thank our listener very much. And hopefully we have inspired someone to either come back again or to share the podcast with somebody else that they know would be interested. So thank you so much. Thanks to you, Justine, for coming along and taking the time. I know it's very early in the morning there in California.
Well, no problem. It was fun.
It's a pleasure.
I always like talking with you.